This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Now I want to address something some people have come to hear about. These attacks involve a minor, and they are completely false and untrue about something that happened nearly 40 years ago. But more than being completely false and untrue, they're very hurtful to me personally. I want to make it clear to the media present and to the people present. I have not provided alcoholic beverages, beer, or anything else to a minor. I have not been guilty of sexual misconduct with anyone. This article is a prime example of fake news, an attempt to divert attention from the true issues which affect our country.
Well, Judge Roy Moore, in his response, here we are, 40 years later, weeks before this general election and something like this. I mean, this is really, Scott, this is a tough thing. You know, you get accused and weeks away, and you're in the home stretch of a campaign. All of a sudden you get this thrown at you. This is a tough situation. Of course, the pundits are all trying to super analyze Judge Martinez. Did he do it? Didn't he do it? It sounds like he's not really passionate enough in his denial. Looking at this thing, I mean, wow. It's like any would-be potential political candidate these days is going, I don't know if my background could handle the scrutiny. Just to remember, think, okay, did I ever do anything? Was I ever close to doing? Did I ever think about doing something? Forget about even, having a Black Russian or, as a drink and or anything right now that has to do with Russia. It's like all this stuff. It's just, but hey, here we are in our society today. All of a sudden we want to be self-righteous. And when we are such a mess and, as a country, I was reading a book. We're going to be talking with the author later on who's his background in conservatism. He's been there from the early days going back to Goldwater and, the Young Republicans, looking forward to our conversation. His book, Lee Edwards, Just Right, A Life in Pursuit of Liberty. He talks about, liberty being the main issue. And one of the things that I've been realizing is that, yes, liberty is huge. But what sustains liberty is a moral backdrop. You have to have the moral foundation. Without it, it's just a passion. It's a human passion. It really doesn't take root. And I think that's the big difference, in our country and why liberty was able to take root, because our founding fathers were religious people. They were men of faith. They had asked God, hey, look, give us the wisdom here and the passion and the wherewithal to invest their very lives, their treasure, their talents, everything about who they were for the sake of liberty. And we enjoy it. And it seems so casual for us. And so, I say casual because so few people actually pay the cost for liberty. I mean, when you got 1%. Less than 1% of our country's population involved in the military, for example. But, so we have a very limited understanding of liberty just by virtue of the people who've defended it. And then beyond that, we deal with, something that's creeping into the culture right now. And that is really the degradation of our moral background. I mean, everything that's going on, what has been exposed from, Bill Cosby and Weinstein and, political arenas, with Bill Clinton and others, Anthony Weiner. I mean, you just go, it runs all over. I mean, this is our society. This is what we live in. And now here it is. You get this accusation. I mean, it's not even a conviction. It's an accusation. And this man's life, his service is all in question. Wow, this is a tough time in which we live in. But, you know, when you're amoral, as we've become here in this country, boy, it's all up for grabs, isn't it?
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I have problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody,
and it's 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Welcome back. I am Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. And if you're so inclined and you want to drop me an email, we'd love to hear from you. Good, bad, indifferent, let us know. Hey, get it off your chest. No need to drag it around. You can give it to me straight. I can handle it. I can handle the truth. Okay, so Bill at BillMartinezLive.com. Speaking of the truth, we had a real special guest coming up. When you hear the name Zapruder, I know exactly where your mind goes to if you had any recollection whatsoever of the JFK assassination. Well, Alexandra Zapruder joins us. She began her career on the founding staff of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., a graduate of Smith College. She later earned her master's degree in education at Harvard University, author of Salvage Pages, Young Writers' Diaries of the Holocaust, which won the National Jewish Book Award in the Holocaust category. Also served as the guest curator for an exhibition of original diaries at the Holocaust Museum in Houston. Alexandra, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you on. I mean, you know, just your own career and all that you've been able to accomplish and to keep, you know, history alive the way you have has really honored your family. And we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, about the Zapruder film, of which is part of your familial heritage. This has to be somewhat of an influence and driving force in your whole life, has it not been?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in a way, you know, I grew up in a family in which we very rarely talked about the film. And, of course, mm-hmm. I knew from an early age, you know, I knew that our name was well known and I knew why. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I really understood the significance of the film and its importance in American life until I grew up and until I decided to write this book about it. And so the book that I wrote first about the Holocaust was really driven by, you know, a deep love of history and curiosity about the past. And it may be that in some way that came about through our connection to the film, but not in any way that I, you know, that is very specific or that I could really identify, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I want to get into a little bit more of the genesis, and that is your family and your, you know, your grandfather and this tradition. And I mean, here you are, you're writing about the Holocaust and, you know, you're educated, you're going to colleges and you're in classrooms with other kids, some that believe the Holocaust never happened, that it's all fake news. And here you are, you go head to head with this and realizing that, you know, there's more to this story than just some emotional response that says, oh, this never happened.
Of course. And I was very fortunate to be on the founding staff of the Holocaust Museum because that was a place where, you know, scholarship and rigorous study and thought was valued very highly. And, of course, what we were all doing was gathering you know, gathering evidence of this enormous crime. And of course, unlike the Kennedy assassination, when it comes to deniers of the Holocaust, you know, I almost think that you just can't even take it seriously. There's such an overwhelming amount of evidence and records that the idea of denying the Holocaust is completely nonsensical. Whereas with the Kennedy assassination, you know, reasonable people can disagree within a certain realm of conversation about what did or didn't happen. And then, of course, there are the outliers who are, who cling to conspiracy theories that don't make a lot of sense. But that seems to be the way that our world has evolved more and more with every passing year, it seems.
Well, let's talk about your grandfather. Who was Abraham Zapruder?
He was a Russian immigrant. He came to this country at age 15 in 1920. He came from Imperial Russia, a Jewish family, very much oppressed and persecuted there, and they were extremely poor, very limited means and opportunity. And so he, like millions of other immigrants to this country, came and made a life for himself. He went to night school and taught himself, learned English, went to work in the garment industry on 7th Avenue as a pattern maker, and then ultimately, you know, worked his way up. He married my grandmother, and he eventually, in the early 1940s, they moved to Dallas for a business opportunity. And after, you know, many ups and downs over the years, he really, he managed to reach the middle class. And, you know, it's just a very archetypal story of, you know, a poverty-stricken immigrant without an education who came here and, you know, gradually, you know, found the upward mobility for which America is famous. So that was the story of his early life. He was someone who he loved music. He never had lessons, but he could play almost anything by ear. He particularly loved the piano. And he loved gadgets. He loved cameras and home movies, of course, but also he was sort of known in the family for always kind of, you know, very happily playing with the sprinklers and wiring things around the house. You know, he was very good with his hands, and he, his favorite thing to read was Popular Mechanics. You know, he was a really an interesting, a very interesting person with a lot of interests and a lot of curiosities. And, you know, I'm sorry I never knew him. He died when I was a baby, but I've heard wonderful stories about him my whole life.
Yeah, well, I can tell. It still warms your heart, though. You know, you had that direct contact, but yet, you know, so much of his story continues. And, you know, as you talk proudly of his experience as an immigrant and how he pulled himself up and he and your grandmother to accomplish what they've done and how they set the rest of the family in motion. You know, this is as you say, kind of a typical immigration story where, you know, people were chased out of their home country and they come here and find America. They assimilate and work hard. And, that is a story that is consistent, I have found, with immigrants who have gone on and enjoyed success like your grandfather. So it is very typical
Absolutely.
In that sense, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that they were, you know, they believed very deeply in America. They loved America and they believed in everything that it stood for. And for them, you know, that was synonymous with, you know, a set of progressive values about welcoming the stranger and about, you know, making this country a place where people could come and succeed. And of course, you know, nothing embodied that more than President Kennedy and the idea of, you know, this young president who saw so much promise and potential, who asked so much of Americans, you know, that was how they saw him. And, you know, they were Roosevelt Democrats first, and then they were, you know, Kennedy supporters when the time came. And I think that had everything to do with where, you know, with where he came from and his background.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, welcoming the stranger. What comes to mind is also, you know, the character of Jewish people. It was like, it was within their DNA, you know, as God said, look at, because you were once aliens in a foreign land, you need to be welcoming to people as well. And that seems to transition and carry through the Jewish culture as well. Am I right?
Absolutely, 100%. And those values were very deeply ingrained in my grandfather and my grandmother and my mother's family too, and all the way down to us and our, you know, children. I think it is very much part of, you know, the Jewish concept
exactly.
of, you know,
well,
what
we,
is right and what...
We got to take a quick break here, Alexandra,
okay.
So stay with us. We've got more from Alexandra Zabruder on the other side of the break. Stay with us. 15 minutes after the top of the hour right now.
If you or someone you care about loves outdoor adventure, then check out slingbow.com for some unique holiday gift ideas. That's slingbow.com, where we have some innovative new products for the archer, hunter, or bow fishing enthusiast in your family. Now through January, use the promo code HOLIDAY to get free shipping in the U.S. or Canada. And from all of us at Slingbow Industries, have a safe, joyous, and peaceful holiday season.
Kiyosaki, Rogers, and Schiff all concur there's an economic calamity that'll be facing this country. My question to you is, do you know when and are you prepared? Most people don't, but my friends over at Republic Monetary Exchange have been leading experts in precious metals to help you offset the coming economic collapse. Right now, for a limited time, they have a free book called The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. You simply need to give them a call at 888-772-2929 to get that in your hands. Do not allow the insiders to do what they did to you in 2008, putting your IRAs, 401ks, and savings in jeopardy. You need this book, and you need it now. The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. Call 888-772-2929. That's 888-772-2929. There's a reason that the largest investment banking company in the world, J.P. Morgan, just purchased another 50 million ounces of silver. This free book will explain it. 888-772-2929.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Most people think life insurance pays after you're dead. That's true. But did you know you can have tax-free access to your life insurance while you're still alive? You can use the life benefits of your life insurance to grow your money with certainty and guarantees. No stock market risk, no tax risk, and no penalties. Call Life Benefits if you'd like a free book about how this can be done. Call 702-660-7000. That's 702-660-7000.
For P150, P150GA, P150NY, P150OK, P150TN, C250A, C250E, C250Q. Not available in all states. If New York or Colorado, call for a similar offer.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $100, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-972-6540. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away. So you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired. There are no networks, so you can choose any dentist you'd like. Call now for a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-972-6540. That's 1-800-972-6540. 6540 1-800-972-6540.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. The NSA has noticed how much time you spend on conservative news sites. We have no choice but to consider you a domestic terrorist.
Tired of your internet activity being monitored by Big Brother? Get VirtualShield.com, the world's easiest-to-use virtual private network. Browse the web anonymously, leaving pesky advertisers and spies in the dust. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
Listening to Bill Martinez live.
Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am a life that was changed.
It's always a great day here at Bill Martinez live.
19 minutes after the top of the hour, Bill Martinez here, just the way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. We're talking with Alexandra Zapruder, her brand new book, 26 Seconds, A Personal History of the Zapruder Film. When you hear the name Zapruder, it takes you right there. The cover of her new book captures, I think, one of those, that iconic moment that was part of the 26 seconds taken by her grandfather, Abraham Zapruder. Amazing, Alexandra, that, even on that cover, you see that, and it's like you get all 26 seconds in that one shot, the cover of your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think those images are so iconic now, and mm-hmm. You know, they call to mind so many things. You just need to see that green grass and the black limousine and Jackie and the pink, suit. And it just takes you back to, this turning point in American life. It's remarkable.
Well, you mentioned that your grandfather, Abraham Zapruder, was a tinkerer, but also that, he loved to take pictures. And so what was happening for him? How did he find himself there on that day and that moment with a camera?
He had been taking home movies since the mid-1930s, which is really quite early. He started the first home movies that we have that he took were of my aunt as an infant. And so he was quite a good home movie, amateur photographer. And he mm-hmm. had intended to... His office, where Jennifer Junior's, which was his dress manufacturing company, was located just adjacent to Dealey Plaza. Mm-hmm. So he knew that the president's motorcade was going to pass very nearby his office. So he planned to go down that morning or around midday to try to see if he could get the president and the first lady on film. He had ended up actually leaving his camera home that morning. I guess he changed his mind or he was hesitating, and it was his longtime assistant Lillian Rogers who sent him home, convinced him to go home and get it. Mm. And he got back in time to go down, and he scouted a couple of different locations. He was looking for the right vantage point. He ended up climbing up on a 4-foot high sort of ledge.
Mm-hmm.
He had vertigo, so he asked his receptionist Marilyn to stand behind him and to steady him if he got dizzy. He was worried if following the motorcade and looking through the zoom lens that he might get dizzy and fall. And so he got himself in position and waited for the motorcade to come in order to get this moment on film.
So here, here he is, kind of the reluctant photographer, and who was to know what he was about to capture?
Yeah, he later said that he sort of couldn't make sense of what he was seeing as he saw it, even though he was looking through the viewfinder. But of course, when the final shot came, the shot that struck the president in the head,
mm-hmm.
he knew immediately that the president was dead and that there was absolutely mm-hmm. no way that the president could have survived, which put him in a, in a very traumatic position because no one around him knew what had happened. And he said later that he got down off of that ledge and he was screaming. He was completely distraught, saying that the president was dead. And within 15 minutes or so, he was approached by a reporter on Dealey Plaza who asked him, whether if he had caught what had happened on film. And at that moment, I think he kind of snapped out of his the state that he was in, and he said to this reporter, Harry McCormick, that he needed to speak to the federal authorities. And so that is what set in motion the chain of events for the rest of the day, in which it took all day, ended up meeting up with Forrest Sorrells, the head of the Secret Service in Dallas, and then eventually taking most of the day to get the film developed and get copies made
mm-hmm.
For the Secret Service. So it was a long and traumatic day for him, but I think it seems to me that his main focus was making sure that he got the film developed and making sure that the federal authorities had access to it.
Yeah, because you don't know until you know, right? I mean, you think you've caught it, but until
right.
because we're talking the days when, you know, you had to develop the film, and there it is, and, you know, and this is his property, but yet he's working, I mean, he's volunteering, working with the authorities on this, and, gosh, I gotta imagine what other dynamics took place in terms of, because there's so much conspiracy about everything that happened that day. You know, what your grandfather must have been subjected to, or was it just a straight up kind of thing where you look at, I think I've got something here, and, go ahead.
Yeah, I think at the time, in the immediate, I think the conspiracies and the, suspicions and some veiled or not so veiled accusations came much later. I think at the time, of course, Dallas was in a state of complete chaos. The Secret Service was, not at all prepared for this to happen. And it was a local, Secret Service outfit. It wasn't the headquarters. So these were people who, were doing the best they could under the circumstances, but, were completely overloaded with trying to gather evidence and the like. And, of course, Ben Oswald, was arrested for having shot J.D. Tippit later in the day. It's not very long after. So there just was so much going on. I think for my grandfather, I think in that moment, he was cooperating with the federal authorities. I often think that had Forrest Worrells asked him for the camera with the film in it and simply taken it, he would have, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have simply turned it over. But that's not what happened. They didn't ask for it. They just said, would you give us a copy? So by the end of the day, he went home with the original film and his camera and one copy of it. And he then had to figure out what to do with this, because simultaneous to the effort to get the film developed and contending with the federal authorities, the media got wind of this film. And so there was, the beginnings of what would become, an incredibly, overwhelming pressure to sell the film to somebody in the media and make it available to the American people. So he was really caught, I think, in the crosshairs of, so to speak, a number of different pressures that, nothing in his life really could have prepared him for that. Although he was, I think, a man of tremendous character and, steady in his nerves and focused on doing the right thing as best he could. And I think that's what guided him in that immediate aftermath.
I got to imagine, after he develops the film, he makes a copy, and he realizes as much as he could. I mean, he's not an FBI agent. He's a witness to this incredible event, the assassination of the president. And he's got to feel like, wait, I've got something greater than myself in my hands here. What am I to do with this? What kind of responsibility do I have, right?
100%. That is absolutely what he struggled with, and the choices he made in the immediate aftermath were shaped exactly by that question of of what to do with it. And I certainly am happy to tell you about that. I mean, it was a difficult set of decisions for him, a moral dilemma in terms of profiting financially, et cetera. So,
well, we got to go to break, Alexander. We come back. I do want to get your sentiment, your perspective on that, because I can only imagine what he must have been dealing with. And you think about if this would happen in today's environment, different story altogether, without a doubt. 29 minutes after the top of the hour. More from Alexander after this.
Attention users of the blood-thinning drug Xarelto. If you took the drug Xarelto and experienced complications such as cerebral hemorrhage, gastrointestinal bleeding, or other internal bleeding, or if a loved one has died after taking Xarelto, you may be eligible to get a cash award for your suffering. Call the Xarelto Help Hotline now at 1-800-430-5010. That's 800-430-5010. To qualify for a cash settlement, you must file a claim before the deadline. So don't miss your opportunity for a cash settlement. Call 800-430-5010 now for a free, no-obligation consultation. Our call center is open 24/7. So if you took the drug Xarelto and experienced cerebral hemorrhage, gastrointestinal bleeding, or other internal bleeding, or if a loved one has died after taking Xarelto, call the Xarelto Help Hotline now at 800-430-5010. 800-430-5010. That's 800-430-5010.
Back pain doesn't take vacations. It never celebrates holidays. It's on the job 24/7 to keep your life exactly where it is, in limbo. But it doesn't have to be that way, because Laser Spine Institute can help you take back your life from chronic neck and back pain. With a less than 1-inch incision, our minimally invasive procedures have provided relief to over 60,000 patients with a 97% patient satisfaction rate. So get ready to stand tall and live the life you've imagined for yourself without pain. Are you or a loved one suffering from a bulging disc, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, pinched nerve, or degenerative disc disease? Call our spine care consultants now at
855-510-BACK.
For a no-cost MRI review and to learn more, it's time to say goodbye to chronic neck and back pain.
Call 855-510-BACK to see if laser spine surgery is right for you. That's 855-510-BACK.
What have you got to lose? Laser Spine Institute, the leader in minimally invasive spine surgery.
How did you become addicted? A friend? Were you at a party and someone said, "Hey, try this." Then you got the cold sweats and started shaking. And the more you did it, the more it didn't work. So you switched to the needle. Now you're a train wreck. Drinking, drugging, broke. Your family hates you. And you hate you. Get out of your hell on earth now. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline today for immediate help. In many cases, your insurance may cover the costs. We can't guarantee it, but we can guarantee we have what you need to change your life for the better. Pick up your cell phone and call right now.
855-700-2979. 855-700-2979. 855-700-2979. That's 855-700-2979.
To Bill Martinez live.
And I thank you for believing in me. You've given me your all, and now I'll never be alone. I thank you, you never stop loving me.
It's always a great day here at Bill Martinez live.
Back with the America 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here with you. We're talking 26 seconds, the personal history of the Zapruder film with the granddaughter of Abraham Zapruder, the man responsible for capturing those iconic 26 seconds that are emblazoned in our memory. And, you know, the thing is so incredible about this, Alexandra, is that this is beyond generations. This is just crossed over, you know, from one generation to the next. This is how powerful and iconic this 26 seconds is, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's interesting because I think what ended up happening over the decades as the film, you know, gradually made its way into the public is that it somehow kind of stands in as a sort of collective memory of a traumatic event. So even if you weren't there, you are able to see what happened and the pathos of that moment, you know, this young president and his beautiful wife and, you know, with their future before them and all the promise of the country. And then suddenly within, you know, half of a minute, less even, all of that gets you know, interrupted by this bullet and so violently brought to an end. And I think it just sort of held on to people's imaginations for all that it represents, not only the moment itself, but also, you know, just the idea of American promise and how things, you know, really went off the rails after that happened.
Well, we all want it to be a settled question. Even with the release here recently of more documents, you know, President Trump is releasing them, which was by law saying that they were all to be released. Of course, we knew there was going to be redaction involved, and there's still not all of them. But, you know, we say often in the show, in the absence of fact, opinion rules, and it's all over the place. And even with this 26 seconds, this infamous Zapruder film, you know, which was, you know, really a big part of the movie, JFK, and how Kevin Costner, as his role as the lead attorney there, you know, talking about, you know, and the film was a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
A depiction of it.
And I think one of the things that's so interesting about the film is that, you know, it is both a visual record of the assassination, but it doesn't provide a universal consensus on what happened. And so there's sort of this built-in contradiction. You know, you can look at it and look at it and look at it, and people keep seeing different things. And one of the things I thought about a lot in the last weeks when the new documents came out and there were all these questions about, you know, conspiracy theory is that, you know, there comes a point where we have to wonder what question we're really trying to answer. You know, are we really trying to answer the question of what exactly happened to the president, or are we trying to somehow come to terms with how this could have happened and come to terms with this national wound that seems unable to heal? And I think we're so far past the point where, you know, you could take 50 people and they would all look at the Zapruder film and see the same thing. But, you know, really all you need to see is that, you know, the president was murdered and, you know, and the country has spent the last, you know, five decades reeling from that.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And I think that it blocks our maturation and our ability to move forward, which is what you're suggesting, because it's like we're stuck in 1963 because of this. And this is the problem with deception and the untruth. The truth does set you free, and we are enslaved by this 26 seconds. Because we don't know the truth, or even what we do know, you know, some people say, well, you know, the Warren Commission spelled it out. That's it. End of story. But it's not gospel according to, you know, I think general consensus.
Yeah, I think there is so much debate about what actually took place. And as I said, I think, you know, within a certain range, I think reasonable people can disagree about what took place. And then there is a lot of static and a lot of noise on the extremes that, you know, just it makes the conversation impossible. You know, you find yourself, and I certainly experienced this in doing the research on this book, you know, you find yourself batting away, you know, absolutely crazy theories that really don't have any evidence. And it's almost like, what's the point of doing that? You know, what are we really trying to understand? And also at this point, you know, what does it really matter? I mean, the implications of the president's assassination are more than clear. And so how will it change anything if we know exactly which bullet, you know, came from? Anyway, I mean, I understand why people believe that knowing whether or not it was a conspiracy is important. I do understand that. But I also think that what you said is right, that, you know, there's a way in which we're stuck in a set of questions that might be preventing us from gaining a deeper understanding.
I think ultimately it's scary for people because you think, could your government be involved in taking out the president of the United States? That's a scary idea. And
that
people are freaked
idea.
Out over it. Right.
That is a scary idea. But you know what's equally scary is that a loser with a $12 rifle can take out a head of state.
Right.
It's all scary.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things about the film is that no matter how you interpret it, it's terrifying that something of that magnitude could happen that suddenly and with no warning, and that there could be so many consequences. You're absolutely right. It's terrifying to think that it was a conspiracy, and it's terrifying to think that it wasn't a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some positive takeaways, as you say, from this, and that is that democracy lived on. Even in spite of, as I say, we're stuck. I think we're still stuck in the 60s because of this. And this is why, I mean, for us, you know, our, you know, credo here on the show is to pursue the truth no matter where it leads. And experience has taught me over the years, Alexandra, is that when we avoid the truth, it's debilitating. And, you know, 7 out of 10 Americans say we're on the wrong track, and we're kind of lost and probably in a more chaotic sense of being than ever we were in the 60s and through the 70s. And it's because I think we're off the mark. And I believe that if we get reconnected with the truth again, you know, we can handle the truth. You know, we can understand, okay, this is what happened. Let's move on. Whatever traumatic incident has occurred for us, historically speaking. And I think we can grow and positively adjust. But, you know, we just cannot have a government that says, you know, we know better than you do and we're going to protect you. You know, this is a government of, for, by, we the people. I maintain that. And I believe your grandfather did as well. We mentioned, you know, right before we went to break last time, we're coming up to another break here. But, you know, the things that your grandfather had to deal with in turning over the film and, you know, some of the political machinations that were involved with him having something, you know, that was so telling about the assassination. Tell us about that.
Well, the biggest problem for my grandfather was that he was very afraid that the film was going to be exploited or sensationalized. Mm-hmm. You know, that was his big fear. And his big fear was that it was going to bring further harm to the Kennedy family. And yet, at the same time, you know, I think he struggled on a personal moral level because he understood that the film, he understood because of the way that the media was reacting that the film had a financial value. And, you know, he had grown up incredibly poor, very insecure about, you know, financial stability. And suddenly he found himself in something of possession that could potentially bring a measure of financial security to himself and his family. And yet, to sell it for money felt like it was, you know, morally wrong. And
yes.
Wrong. And wow. So he really, that was the gist of the struggle, and he tried his best to find a middle ground.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about how he came to that middle ground when we come back. More from Alexandra Zapruder. We're talking 26 Seconds, her new book on Bill Martinez Live.
Medicare rules are confusing. They should be. There are over 130,000 pages of regulations. There's Part A through D, Medicare Advantage, and Medigap. According to the CMS, there are government programs available that can help you pay for your medical expenses. Choosing the right Medicare plan is a really big deal. The wrong choice can cost you a lot of money, and the right choice can put more money in your pocket. Call one of our licensed representatives today. At 65 plus Medicare, our free service can show you a plan that will maximize your Medicare benefits, ensure you are taking advantage of all available government assistance programs, and save you money. Plus, call right now and get a free report on how to avoid costly Medicare mistakes. Call now.
855-301-5506. 855-301-5506. 855-301-5506. That's 855-301-5506.
Hey there, did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park, or the beach, or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-981-9347. 800-981-9347. That's 800-981-9347.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-557-0158. That's 800-557-0158. Again, 800-557-0158.
Hi, I'm Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time. But some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why Famous Footwear supports the life-saving research and programs of the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health. Help us give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.
Someone once said, live free or die, right? Bill Martinez, live.
Year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians and a great abundance of food. We thank God for our homes and our food and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world for freedom and justice.
Amen.
Bill Martinez, live.
Yeah, but where are the tortillas? You know, that's what we want. You know, it's like, got to have some tortillas, you know, homemade tortillas. 14 minutes, that's a whole other story. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back. We're talking with Alexandra Zapruder, her brand new book, 26 Seconds, A Personal History of the Zapruder Film. Alexandra, you know, to be in the position that you're in, not only as a historian, but this is personal. I mean, this is a, like, you're the family historian here.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about what you were saying before the break about, you know, nothing, about not having anything, you know, to fear in the truth. And I was thinking, you know, for this book, unlike my first book, you know, whenever you look into your own family history and you, you know, try to understand the motivations and actions of people that you love, there's a, you know, there's a bit of a rift there. You know, you don't know what you're going to find. And in our family, there was a lot of silence around the film. And I think some of the, you know, questions around profiting financially from the film led to, you know, a feeling that it was best just not to talk about it because it was too difficult and too uncomfortable. And so really what I wanted to do in this book was to, you know, bring these issues to light, not so much to judge my family for what they did, but to try to understand and also to try to understand the other side and to create a record of the film that could be passed on to the next generation so that they would not inherit, you know, this silence or this sense of doubt about, you know, who we are and what we did. And I think that turned out to be an incredibly gratifying aspect of the work for me.
Well, your grandfather really could have, you know, as you said, he was in a bit of a moral dilemma here. You know, thinking, all right, well, I've, you know, grew up poor. I've worked hard all my life. You know, this is my shot at it, you know, secure my family. And, you know, this falls in his lap. This is, in a sense, you know, a blessing from God. He probably thought, you know, here I am. I mean, of all the people, I'm the only one of all the thousands of people that were there that day. And I've captured these iconic 26 seconds. why shouldn't I be able to, you know, draw some personal benefit from that?
Right. Well, I think that he really felt that, you know, I think anybody can understand, mm-hmm. you know, that temptation. I think on the other hand, you know, he said many times, and I believe that he meant it, that he would have given anything to not have been the person who caught that moment on film. And he would have, you know, happily not had the financial, you know, opportunity if it had meant that he could have been freed from the burden and the trauma of having been in that situation. But I think he, you know, did his utmost in that moment to find a balance. You know, he mm-hmm. sold the film to Life magazine, which was an organization that he felt that he could trust. Mm-hmm. You know, he made sure that in the contract with Life magazine that the copyright to the film would be protected and defended so that it wouldn't get out and be exploited by, you know, unscrupulous people. And he, you know, requested that Life magazine treat the film always with dignity and good taste, which is an actual clause in the contract, which is such a kind of throwback to a time that is almost hard to imagine. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, when he was paid this $150,000 for the rights to the film, he gave the first installment of it, which was $25,000, to the widow of J.D. Tippit, who was the police officer that was shot in the movie theater. And so I think he tried to find a way to, you know, do something good with the money that he got and make sure that he was, you know, that the way that Life magazine handled the film would reflect his values, but also, you know, accepted whatever guilt might come with the money in the hopes that, you know, it might someday help his own family.
Now, did Life magazine, in your assessment, did they help or hinder the understanding of what happened on that fateful day?
You know, I think that Life magazine, it's very interesting because Life magazine was, at the time, you know, their main concern was sort of an editorial one. There was a sense that showing this film to the American people that it was too violent, it was disrespectful to the memory of the president and to the presidency, and so they kept it from the American people for a long time. And I don't think that they did so, there's no evidence in the records that I looked through, that they did so out of any political motivation, mm-hmm. you know, or any sense that, you know, there either was or wasn't a conspiracy to cover up. I think that they were doing it because they really reflected the cultural norms of the time.
Exactly.
But I do think that an unintended consequence of not having made it available earlier definitely fed the sense on a lot of people's parts that there was something to hide.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is about unintended consequences, about
exactly.
things that, you know, people did that ended up, you know, having results that no one could have anticipated.
Yeah, and you bring up an important part, and that is the love that the country had for JFK and for Jackie, you know, the family, you know, not knowing all the different story, whatever. It didn't matter. It was
sure.
just the country was in love with his family, the whole idea of Camelot and all that it represented. I mean, it was, wow. I mean, they were the king and queen of the United States. And, you know, as you said, whether it was your grandfather or others, it was, can we protect him? And then, of course, unfortunately, you start getting some of the National Enquirer photos, you know, of the president's body and that eked mm-hmm. out. And, you know, and that was hurtful. But I think it also should have been a key, whether it was Life magazine or others that held and are still holding on to this information about the assassination, is that the people can't handle it. And often I find that the sooner we're able to handle it, the better it is, because then we can move on. But, you know, we are a nation of laws,
right.
And there is due process, right?
Right. Well, that is exactly right. I mean, I think that was very much the attitude on the part of Life magazine. There was something a little bit paternalistic about their attitude, and it was very much a sign of the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then by 1975, Life magazine returned the film to our family. There was a lot of controversy around it, and there was a lot of aggravation, and they really didn't want to be responsible for it anymore. And so they returned the film to our family, and my father took on the responsibility of making it available to the American people. And he really had to grapple with, you know, this set of decisions about you know, he didn't want to be in the position of being a censor and telling people that they couldn't see it. On the other hand, he didn't want it to be sensationalized or exploited. You know, so he had to, you know, really struggle to find a balance, you know, because Life magazine really hadn't grappled with those issues. They simply didn't make it available. And then when, you know, by the time, you know, you get to the late 1970s and through the 80s, you know, times have changed. And the American public, you know, you cannot make the case anymore that the American public didn't have a right to see this film out of decorum. You know, that ship has sailed.
Exactly.
And well, so I think you're right. You know, now, of course, the film is available to anybody who has, you know, access to a computer and can see it on YouTube. I mean, there are no restrictions anymore, but it was certainly something that happened very gradually over a long period of time.
Well, this had to become a full-time job for your dad. You know, well, Life magazine says, hey, we're done. We don't want to handle this. This is back to the Zapruder family. And somebody has to take the lead on this, right?
It was the last thing in the world he wanted to do. You know, he was a tax attorney. He had a lot of interests. He was a great guy. He had three young kids at the time, myself and my two brothers. And, you know, he didn't want to be in the position of, you know, having to manage this and make these decisions and bear the criticism that you know, inevitably came along with it. But I think he lived up to that responsibility, feeling that was what, you know, his father by that time was gone. That was what his mother, my grandmother, felt, that, you know, that it should be back with the family. And so, you know, he did the very best he could, but I know that it was something that caused him a lot of pain and, you know, a lot of stress, because it just wasn't, it was very uncomfortable. And the memory of the assassination was personally painful for him, and it was painful for him to remember his father in that way. So I think it was very unwelcome, but he certainly did the best he could.
You know, talking about the environment and the media, you address in your book, you know, the dynamic with Dan Rather and his actions regarding the film. We've got about a minute and a half left. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, Dan Rather was at the time a hungry, aggressive young reporter, and he did what a lot of hungry, aggressive young reporters did at the time. You know, that story about Dan Rather is almost more interesting for what it reveals about how different Richard Stolle, the reporter from Life magazine, was. Mm-hmm. Because they were all like that. They all wanted to get their hands on the film. You know, they all wanted to, you know, make their careers, further their careers if they could. You know, Dan Rather has, in the decades since, I think, you know, done many great things, and he's certainly redeemed himself, in my view, in the last few years, you know, by being a voice of reason. But I think it just really, really shows the media climate and the pressure that my grandfather was facing in that moment. You know, a lot of people wanting to get their hands on this film at any price.
Exactly. Well, Alexander Zapruder has been with us. Her brand new book, 26 Seconds, all about that iconic film and the story behind it. What do you want people to take away from this, Alexandra, after all is said and done?
You know, I think that the story of the film is the story of the second half of the 20th century in America. You know, this is a story about the assassination in the film in one sense, but it's also about some of the really most important issues that we've grappled with around media ethics, around morality, around, you know, what the public has the right to see and know, around, you know, cultural norms changing, technology. I mean,
exactly.
You know, there's so many parts to it. So I hope that if people read the book, they will find much that is of interest in it.
Google has all but banned the movie series What Would Muhammad Do? It's a brilliant film on the true history and goals of Islam. This is the film Trump's enemies and holdouts from the Obama administration are terrified you will see. Pro-Islamic groups working with Google and other multi-billion dollar corporations have vowed to suppress the distribution of What Would Muhammad Do? When you see it, you'll understand why. Get your copy while you still can. Order the 4-DVD collection today for $39.95 plus shipping and handling. Or go online and download the entire movie series for just $19.95. But wait, for those who order in the next 30 minutes, we'll throw in a 9-part series on the Muslim Brotherhood absolutely free. Go to www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now. That's www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter.